Welcome, everyone, to Voice of the Valley here in the Horn Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Studios. I'm your host, Dave Bell. 428-9494, that's the phone number, 928-428-9494. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're having a good day. We're discussing the trials and tribulations of everyday life before we came on.
Yep, always do.
Dr. Sarah Sales with the Gila Watershed Partnership is here. She joins me the first Wednesday of every month, and it is Nazdrovia. It is May Day. I don't think anybody pays attention to that part of May anymore, do they, since the fall of the Soviet Union?
Not that I know of. When you said it, I went, oh, yeah. I remember in elementary school we had, like, May Day picnics or something, but yeah.
But it wasn't this the traditional day of the Soviet Revolution from 1918?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Was it 18 or 13? 18, right? It was during World War One.
I think so, yeah. But I'm not, Russian history is not my forte, so.
Yeah, what I know from the film Potemkin.
Gotcha.
The
yeah.
Silent Russian film that every film class has to watch because it shows you what editing can do.
Yes.
That's its sole purpose.
Yep.
So I don't know a ton about it either. But I always remember May Day was a big deal because the Soviets would do their parade I'm showing my age, Brezhnev not Brezhnev, who was the guy after that?
Gorbachev?
No.
No.
Oh, doggone it. I can picture them. Giant eyebrows. I mean, they had their own zip code. They were so big. Khrushchev.
Oh, yeah.
I got it backwards. Khrushchev was in the 50s and 60s. Brezhnev is the guy I'm thinking with the eyebrows in the 70s. And they would always have the parade in Moscow, and the news would show it. And
sure.
That's the only thing I remember about May. May 1st, May Day. I think it's something with spring too, isn't it?
There was like a European kind of May Day thing, like the Maypole and all of that type of thing, which I think was May 1st.
But I'm guessing,
I grew up in New Mexico, so yeah. Cinco de Mayo was like our party. So.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's something pagan about the beginning of spring,
yep.
etc.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. It's May 1st, everybody.
Yeah. Happy May.
Happy
Can't
May.
Believe it's already May.
I know.
2024 is like zipping right along.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
This has been a fast year so far.
It has.
Shockingly. Gila Watershed Partnership, you guys just wrapped up the spring plant sale, didn't you?
We did. It was our best plant sale to date. And in fact, we made more this spring plant sale than we have made in an entire year combined of plant sales ever. So thank you to everybody in Safford and regional nurseries and a ton of folks who bought lots and lots of plants and helped us raise some money for GWP and for the nursery.
And just as importantly, putting native plants throughout our community.
Absolutely. We got, and it, you know, what's so interesting to me every year is to watch what kind of is popular. So we've been trying to get milkweeds into gardens because we know farmers and ranchers don't want them out there, but that's how we get the monarchs to come through. They want to lay their eggs on the milkweeds because that's what their larvae want. But you also have to provide something for the grown-up monarchs to eat, and they really like sunflowers and that type of thing. So this year we had a ton of milkweed sales because we were also selling the Maximilian sunflowers, and people were buying those together a lot.
Very good.
Yeah.
It's weird. This year especially, I've seen more of a shift to, I know this is going to sound odd because you're plants, to renewable energies.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I just got a press release from Kelly and Cinema promoting, I forget how much, $65 million for renewable energy development. But that goes with native plants because I'm also thinking of renewing our water resources.
Right.
Because that's what the benefit of a native plant is.
Right.
They're not what we're talking
about. I mean, over time, yeah, you can water them less.
Right.
For sure.
We talked about it before we came on the air. The plants, the flora that just drains water mm-hmm. in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're dealing with the beetle, you know, mm-hmm. salt cedar, praying the beetle does its job. It'll do some. But there are others. Mm-hmm. As we talked about before we went on the air, the pecans, pistachios, they're wonderful cash crops.
Right.
But, boy, do they use a lot of water.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the other one that I was talking about, too.
Alfalfa.
Thank you. Alfalfa may be the biggest criminal.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's our biggest crop in Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up on an alfalfa farm. Like, I get it. I get that.
Huge use.
You know, right. It's a necessary thing. And, like, we raised our own and sold some as well. But it was a water hog. It was the water hog before the pecans came in over where I grew up. So,
but it seems like people are kind of getting the idea mm-hmm. of what can I do to minimize, mm-hmm. I guess, maybe not reduce, but minimize.
Yeah.
Is that what you're feeling from people who are coming in? Or is it just simply, I like these plants. I think this would look great here. Let me put these in.
I think there's kind of a combination. So a lot of the native plants are really pretty. And if your home is stucco or adobe looking or southwestern looking in any way, they look really great out in your yard. But I think that a lot of people still want to have something growing and not go just like pure, hard xeriscape with just like rock and that type of thing. And the native plants definitely give them that sort of in-between place where, yes, they were raised in a nursery. You've got to water them for a little while. But once you can start to back off on that, it is definitely going to be a lot less water going into plants than a yard full of grass or non-native perennials or what have you.
Are you seeing, because you're mm-hmm. you deal in this world, are you seeing a shift away from people planting grass here? Because it's a tough plant to sustain here.
Yeah. I hear it more than I see it. Because I feel like where I live, we could not make like a lawn grow in the yard at my house if we poured, you know, water. Oh. I mean, I guess we could pour water on it all day and all night, but then I wouldn't be able to afford to live there.
Right. Same at my house.
Yeah. And so I think I see a lot of yards that just don't have grass because it's just insanely expensive to water grass here. But I think a lot of people are still wish they had something that they could put in that would create that kind of yard like thing. So
my wife wants artificial turf.
Yeah. Yeah.
She really does.
Yeah.
You know, cause one grandchild now, one on the way. And she's mm-hmm. like, I'd really like something yeah. for them to play on.
Right. Yeah. And you know, now they make the artificial turf that has like the cork under and that type of thing. So it's more environmentally friendly. It still lets water permeate. So it's not the baddie that it used to be. And some of them are really soft now too.
Yeah. So I would hope, because every now and then I'm driving along and mm-hmm. I see a nice green lawn and all I can think of is your water bill has to be insane.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
On the other hand, City of Safford does use reclaimed water in the mm-hmm. golf course mm-hmm. and has a deal with Graham County to send reclaimed water out to the fairgrounds.
Uh-huh.
So we should start seeing that green up. I'm fine with that.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Reuse? Absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
I'd really like to see that at our schools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know what the cost is. I mean, I assume it's got to be expensive with pump stations and relaying pipe and tearing up the roads.
I think the infrastructure of it in up front is expensive. But I think once you have those processes in place, I think it's actually less expensive down the line.
It is. When speaking with the city manager, I know one of his issues is City of Safford by itself doesn't produce enough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is going to sound gross. Sorry, folks. Doesn't produce enough waste.
Right.
To sustain more than what it's doing.
Right.
Basically, all the mm-hmm. treated water mm-hmm. is
has
being
a place
used.
To go, yeah. And that's great.
Which is wonderful, but it'd be nice if we could get more out there so we could have a green community
mm-hmm.
without depleting our potable water resources.
Right.
So Pima and Thatcher need to come in.
Well, and I am, you know, you and I have talked about it for a while, but I am starting to talk to the guys in the city and the county about some of the parks and some of those things and ways we can get native plants in with like temporary irrigation so that over time, you know, they can grow themselves and not have to be irrigated all the time. And so we're talking to the park, talking to the guys about the park on 8th and Discovery Park, and hopefully we'll start seeing more of the native plants going into some of those spaces.
That one, look, if it's Firth Park or Glen Meadows or I forget the one that's on 8th, just down from, just by Dorothy Stinson, I can't remember that one, the name of it. I understand why those don't have it.
Sure.
This is a park under development.
Right.
There's no excuse not to have native plants in
this
one.
That's right, yes.
And the treated effluent line goes right past that
one. Yes, yes.
So from an infrastructure standpoint,
yeah,
it's right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if there aren't native plants in that one, I'll be upset.
Yeah.
And luckily, I can talk to enough elected officials to make my voice heard.
Yeah.
The joy of being a journalist. it's one I really do believe in, that one's got to have native plants. It just does.
Yeah.
So what is, I want to say I saw something. You guys either sent a release or posted something to your social media. Oh, Steve Plath is doing a class.
He just did a class.
He just did a class.
But actually, if you go to our Facebook, you can watch the whole thing on YouTube through, I think, it's not the Southwest Monarch Study, but it's like the Arizona Monarch, and I don't know if it's Association or whatever that posted the original. But yeah, it's free for anybody to watch the YouTube version of his class, and it's planting for the monarch. So if you're interested in, you know, creating a way station or just being part of the pathway for the monarch butterfly to come through here, he's got some great recommendations in that.
I think we talked about it before, but it's always somebody's first time. We need to talk about the importance of the monarch because for years we've heard protect the bee.
Right.
We're losing bee population, and that's going to affect all of us down the road because they're pollinators.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the monarch's a pollinator and is equally important to this area as any bee, correct?
Right. Well, and there's a whole kind of gamut of native pollinators. It's not just, quote, the bee that we need to protect. It's native bees. It's not the honeybee that's in danger. Honeybees are fine. It's native populations of pollinators who live wild that are in danger. And so the monarch is a part of that. There are wasps that are endangered. And then, of course, there are like the lesser long-nosed bat that's a major pollinator of the agave. And was just talking to a friend the other day, has this beautiful, huge agave in his front yard. And I said, oh, that one looks good. That one's old. I bet in your lifetime it will bloom. And he said, oh, yeah, it's ready for tequila. I said, well, yeah, that too. And he goes, oh, I bet that's why you guys are growing so many plants for Bat Conservation International. I bet that's why they need so many plants, because the tequila industry is decimating the agave. And I'm like, yep, 100% that is the reason why we and other nurseries like us provide thousands and thousands of agaves to go out into the desert, because the bat is a major pollinator. So
I'm really going off on a tangent now. There are certain spirits, let's use that phrase, that you can only call that spirit if it comes from a specific region. For example, everything is sparkling wine unless the grapes are grown in Champagne, France.
Right, right. Yes.
And there's a red wine that goes with it. I don't know if it's Merlot or...
right. Mm-hmm.
You can only call that, even though we...
Still call it that,
We still call it that.
Yeah.
My understanding was it was the same with tequila.
Possibly.
Tequila was only tequila if it was grown in Tequila.
Oh, uh-huh.
Mexico. Yeah. But I'm assuming that's because it had the sufficient bat population, and it was a region primed for those agave.
Yeah.
So you weren't artificially creating a problem. Mm-hmm. You were just letting nature do what it needed to do.
Right.
And then you benefited by getting this.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how much of that is, look, I'm a capitalist. I'm all for it. I want my wife to be a billionaire so I can have a sugar mama. I want that. But I wonder how much of it is corporate profit-driven corporate behavior that's causing these problems that we're now having to fix. I wonder about that because people are making tequila everywhere.
Right, right.
But it's, if nature doesn't let you do that properly, you're affecting nature.
Yeah.
I don't know. Throwing it out there. Just throwing it out there. Yes, it'd be more expensive if you only got the tequila from Tequila. But maybe that's the way to go.
Right.
So that way nature functions. Every time we screw around with nature, it just bites us on the hiney.
It does. Yep. And then we have to backtrack, and it's never as good when we backtrack.
We can never get it to where it was.
No.
Yeah. No. When Bobby Brady breaks the, it was Chris Brady breaks the vase because he played basketball in the house. You can't fix the vase properly enough.
Nope.
Did it leak? Did they glue it?
I don't remember. Yes, I think so.
I think that's how it went.
And then when the dad or mom, I can't remember, picked it up, didn't it just kind of crumble in their hands?
You can't get it back to what it was. That's all. So what else is going on with GWP right now?
Oh, goodness. Well, we've got a bunch of stuff. We are in the process of hiring a nursery assistant. So if anybody wants a stable 20-hour-a-week part-time job, it's lots of watering, but also planting and learning about the native plants, all the things you do in a nursery. And that's open right now, and we're receiving applications right now asking for a cover letter, resume, and 3 references. We are getting ready to do our big San Francisco River cleanup on June 1st in combination with the big quack duck race for the Clifton Greenlee County tourism folks. So that'll be a lot of fun. We'll meet about 7:30 at the Ramada there at the park on a Riverside Park there in Clifton. And clean up along the river. Probably, we may go upriver, but we probably will also go like we did last year downriver into town and try to involve people who are walking on the trails and that type of thing in the cleanup. And then the duck race starts there from that bridge, and I can't think of the name of the bridge, but right there, where you turn to go to Riverside Park is the bridge that goes across to like the Clifton Hotel, and we release the little ducks right there. So you need to buy your ducks for the duck race now. It's a lot of fun.
I have to look it up. Torrio
it's
is
got
in
a
my
name.
Head.
Yeah, that sounds right, but I can't remember if it's that one. That's the one that's downstream, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of awards, I think like money awards for the first, second, and third place. And then GWP gives a $25 gift certificate to the plant sale to whatever duck comes in dead last.
I'm rooting for the last place guy.
I know, me too.
So that's cool. That's cool. And you're doing San Francisco cleanups quarterly?
So we used to do them quarterly, and now we're doing them twice a year. Okay. We actually did our first quarter cleanup in Duncan this year and had a really good, successful cleanup. And then we'll do June in Clifton. September will be either Safford or Pima. The Pima cleanup was very, very successful, and there's still a ton of trash out there to pick up. So we just need to figure out where we're going to go. And then we'll be back in Clifton in November.
Very good. 428-9494 if you have a question for Sarah Sales. We're going to take a quick break. More right after this. Whoa. Welcome back to Voice of the Valley in the Horn Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Studios. I'm Dave Bell. Sarah Sales is here. We're talking about the GWP and all things nature.
Yes.
It sounds pretty when we say it, doesn't it?
Yes, 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 it does.
We were talking about what GWP has coming up. You got the San Francisco River cleanup and the just ducky race?
The Big Quack.
Big Quack, thank you.
Rubber duck race down the San Francisco River on June 1st.
I've covered three duck races, so I get them confused. Havasu does one in Lake Havasu. There used to be one here. The women's club here used to do one that went down the canals July 4th. They stopped doing it. Yeah. In fact, I think they sold the ducks.
The duck, the Big Quack ducks are those ducks.
Yeah, to Greenlee Tourism.
Yes.
So that's taking place. What else is going on with GWP?
Well, we have a couple of things, other things starting. We have an internship program starting with EAC this summer. So have a bunch of kids who have applied to become, I say kids, college students who have applied to become interns this summer and in the fall. And then we have our SEALS program, which, of course, we're super proud of. So that started under Melanie, my predecessor. She was able to get that funded for one summer. And then we just really struggled to get anybody to continue to fund it because it's expensive at that level. So we had a spring break program in 2022 and 2023. This year, we're going to have a summer program again. So really excited. We were funded by United Way, Arizona Community Foundation, and the National Forest Foundation. And working with BLM, working with the Forest Service, and they're going to go out and have a really fun summer learning how to do all kinds of stuff with
It should be
resources.
Noted, these aren't the SEALs that, like, take out Bin Laden.
This is the Southeast Arizona Youth Land Stewardship Program. So it's like a youth conservation corps, but just for local area kids to participate. Anyone between 16 and 22 can apply.
So what do these kids do? What will they experience? And can they still apply?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We will not be doing interviews until next week because we've got to get the interns figured out first. But in fact, we won't be doing interviews on the SEALS kids until the week of the 13th. Next week, we'll start the internships. But they will spend 3 weeks with the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, doing fish work. So that could be anything from cleaning fish ponds that are for endangered species to removing and electrocuting non-native fish species, which is considered a humane way of dispatching with them. And everybody, it sounds horrible, but everybody says, oh, it's so much fun. You get to go and play in the water and get wet and splash water on each other and also help the endangered fish that are in the Gila River. They may be planting. They may be doing a little bit of fence work. So it's work. It's still work. They're still out there learning how natural resources managers like the BLM do their work. They'll do that for 3 weeks. And then they'll head up to the Apache Sitgreaves. And they're going to be camping for 3 weeks, but not the whole time. So they'll go up on Monday, they'll work all day, camp Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, work on Thursday, and come home. And then all 6 weeks, so it's 3 weeks with BLM, 3 weeks with Forest Service, but on Fridays, they will be doing a community service project. So if they're from Duncan, they'll go home to Duncan and find a community project to work on in Duncan every week. If they're from Fort Thomas or Bilas or wherever they're from, they'll create and do a community service project for at least 4 Fridays of the 6.
Now, if there's one person who's applied from that community, that's a lot of pressure for a community service project. Can they get help?
They can. They can get help. They can partner with somebody else in the program. They can get help from one of us, or they can go to whatever entity and say, hey, can you just plug me in and then sign off that I showed up? So if it is just, like you say, if just one applicant comes to us from Bilas or just one from Duncan or Clifton and don't have the support of the full, you know, Safford. And we're kind of asking them, you know, either to partner up or to do it on their own anyway. So we want these kids looking for lots of opportunities to provide service in their communities.
Now, I'm focusing on that for a second. Mm-hmm. The community service project, does it have to be for lack of a better term, nature related?
It doesn't have to be, but we'd really like for them to be applying some of the skills that they're learning. So, I mean, they could go mow lawns. They could go help elderly or disabled, or like right. the retired vet who called in that day and said, oh, how do we get the kids to come help us? It could be something like that where they just go help them weed in their yards. I mean, it can be anything like that. Or like I said, they can plug into like our neighbor's farm and pantry or another, you know, Boys and Girls Club or something that has activities going on Friday that they need additional help.
Okay. All right. And this is a 6-week program?
It is. Uh-huh. And so, then one will be chosen or can, you know, they can apply at the end of it to be an ambassador for the following year, and they'll get a little stipend every month to go out and give a speech to Friends of the Library or help with recruiting in the spring, that type of thing.
And it's 16 to 22?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And all right, do the kids, is this...
They are paid. They
are
paid.
I was going to say, is it free work?
But. No. So the regular crew members will make $520 a week. They'll work as contractors. And we'll have one crew lead who we hope is someone who is a little more experienced, either has been a SEAL in the past or worked on a youth conservation crew with the Forest Service or something like that, or has been in AmeriCorps, and they'll make $600 a week.
Boy, I would do anything for $600 a week
right?
at 16.
Right?
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't help you when you're an adult, but boy, right. at 16?
Yeah. It's pretty good pay for a teenager for a summer job.
When I was 16, I was happy to make $30
yeah.
a week.
Yeah.
Yep. And I had extra cash in my pocket.
Yeah. Yep.
So that sounds really, really cool.
Yeah.
I'm assuming a couple of years ago, that program was popular.
It was. It
okay.
was. And we have...
because and I say yeah. a couple of years ago because that's when it was a summer program.
Right, right.
So I'm guessing... because, look, this is an outdoor community.
Yeah.
I mean, kids here grow up camping and mm-hmm. working mm-hmm. the land. Mm-hmm. So it just seems a good fit for the kids here.
Yeah. And, you know, we also are really encouraging kids who don't have those opportunities to apply for this to... get that experience that they might not otherwise get, because this isn't just for, you know, the kids who have the privilege of being able to do that with their families all the time already. This is also a way to try to get kids from some of these underserved communities to have that opportunity they might not already have to get out in nature, learn about natural resources jobs, make these connections with people. If this is the kind of work they want to do, these are the connections they want to be making with people. These are people who will write letters of recommendation for their college applications or help them get jobs in the future.
I've looked at the federal job application, the website, mm-hmm. where you can go to apply for any federal
mm-hmm.
job.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
And if you don't have somebody helping you through that,
yeah.
it's you may be the most qualified person. You'll never even go across anyone's radar.
Yeah.
So just the idea of being able to sit there and talk with a ranger mm-hmm. or a specialist
uh-huh.
from either Forest Service or BLM, oh my goodness, that's a huge benefit right there.
Yeah. Yep. And like last year, they got so much done, they were going to clean out some ponds at Eden. And they got everything Heidi had on her list finished within about 3 of the 5 days. And she said, oh, I've got to come up with something new for you to do tomorrow. We're done with this part of the project. So they got to go and do some river work, which is like the fun work. It's still work. It's still a long day and act physically difficult and everything, but everybody had a great time. And at the end of it, she was saying to those kids, anything you ever need, you call me. You need a job, you call me. You need a reference, you call me.
And to apply, where do they go? The GWP's website?
GWP's website. We've been posting it on Facebook. And there are lots of ways to get in touch with us.
Dr. Sarah Sales with the GWP Gila Watershed Partnership. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening as well. I appreciate it every single day. I'm out of here for right now, but I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.